Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. The Juneau Assembly is moving forward with a plan to ask voters this fall whether to implement a new seasonal sales tax system next year. The proposed change is meant to capitalize on the 1.7 million cruise ship visitors that come to town each summer. The new structure would raise sales taxes in the summer months and lower them in the winter. Assembly members voted at a Finance Committee meeting last night to take public comment on the proposal later this month before deciding whether to put it on the October municipal ballot. Assembly member Alicia Huskandes says she thinks the idea will be well received by many in the community.
In what is an increasingly seasonal economy, it makes sense to capture maximum yield when you have all these folks in town.
Seasonal tax structures aren't uncommon in tourism towns in the state. Other Southeast Alaska towns like Ketchikan, Sitka, Skagway have similar seasonal sales tax structures already in place. Right now, Juneau levies a 5% local sales tax. That's made up of both permanent and temporary taxes that help pay for general government costs, such as specific voter-approved projects and community priorities. But if voters approve the proposed seasonal sales tax system, consumers would instead pay a 7.5% tax in the summer from April through September and a 3.5% tax in the winter from October through March. Members voted last night to remove a part of the original proposal that would have used the additional revenue from the new system to offset the cost of removing local sales tax on food and utilities. That's because it would have basically mirrored another question that's going to be on the ballot this fall. Earlier this month, an advocacy group called the Affordable Juneau Coalition successfully gathered enough signatures to put two questions on the local ballot this fall. Both aim to lower the cost of living for residents, including whether to remove local sales tax on food and utilities. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. And before we get started, we are rescheduling our community barbecue and public safety conversation due to the forecasted atmospheric river and high winds. Please join us next week on July 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Riverside Rotary Park. And like much of Alaska, Juneau has its fair share of disasters and emergencies. Part of living here is planning ahead for scenarios that may require evacuating your home. Juneau Animal Rescue wants to inform residents about how best to prepare to evacuate their pets, too. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Animal control and protection officials in Juneau have a list of things all pet owners should know, do, and have on hand to make sure their pets are safe in an emergency or crisis. Thomas Young Bear is an animal control officer. He says it's a good idea to gather the things our furry friends may need for a few days away from home.
One of the best ways to prepare yourself, your family, and your pets for an expected emergency is to pack a go bag.
He unpacks his own go bag for his dog and cat. In it are a muzzle, jars of kibble, and a well-loved blanket.
These are a couple of my dog's favorite toys.
He also pulls out just the arm of a stuffed animal.
It might even just be a scrap of a toy, but if that dog loves that, if that's what helps it feel safe and familiar and it, with a new situation and want to play and kind of get out of its fearing and anxiety stage, then that's what you should grab and have ready to go.
He squeezes a half-eaten red circle plushie with the squeaker in it.
And sometimes squeaky toys are all it takes.
The go bag should be waterproof and have the pet's medications, 3 days' worth of food, water, and hygiene supplies. And Young Bear says Juneau Animal Rescue can be that temporary landing place for pets in emergencies.
Whether they be fire, flood, landslide, or people who are suddenly unhoused for another unexpected reason, or even expected reasons, such as evictions.
If that moment ever arises, he says there are some things pet owners can do to make it easier for JAR to house pets, like making sure pets are spayed and neutered, and their vaccinations are up to date. And Young Bear says pet owners should give JAR all their pets' information, medical history, vaccination and sterilization records, microchip numbers, and photos of their pets with their people. The organization keeps that in the file with the owner's contact information. That also helps if a pet gets loose in an emergency or is otherwise separated from its family.
Having them microchipped is very, very helpful for us to identify who a particular pet is that we might encounter and who that pet belongs to and where its home is.
JAR offers microchipping, and their staff can scan a pet's existing microchip to make sure the information is up to date. But the best way to keep your pet safe in the event of a landslide or flood, he says, is to identify a friend or family member in Juneau who lives outside of the same hazard zone, is familiar with your pet, and can be prepared to care for the animal if you're evacuated. Young Bear also encourages pet owners to be prepared for their pet to be anxious. Dogs may be more reactive in a crisis, and cats may hide in hard-to-reach places. And he says, if there's a known threat of an emergency, bring outdoor cats inside, where they'll be easier to evacuate. If Juneau residents have a pet emergency, they can reach animal control by calling JAR or through the Juneau Police Department after hours. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
And an immigration detainee originally from Peru and recently held in Alaska was later hospitalized in Washington State with tuberculosis, according to his attorney. State officials deny claims he contracted TB at the Anchorage jail. But as Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, advocates are raising concerns about how well jail staff are screening people in their care.
Sean Quirk, a D.C.-based attorney, says his client was among 35 immigration detainees transferred from the Anchorage Correctional Complex to Tacoma on June 30th. Under contract with Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the Alaska Department of Corrections had temporarily held 40 detainees since President Trump's nationwide immigration crackdown began. Quirk says his client missed two scheduled calls after he was transferred, and an official with the GEO Group, which operates the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma, told Quirk his client was at a hospital, but they wouldn't tell him which one.
We ended up cold calling hospitals, in which I found him at Tacoma General Hospital in the ER, and he had tested positive for tuberculosis. However, I was not able to speak with him because the GEO officer who operates at the behest of ICE refused access to my client.
Quirk says he doesn't know where his client contracted TB. He says the man was discharged from the hospital Wednesday afternoon. According to the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska, detainees held in Anchorage in the care of the State Department of Corrections were told by federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials that they were exposed to tuberculosis. It's a contagious bacterial infection of the lungs that, if left untreated, can be fatal. But Betsy Holly, a spokesperson for the State Department of Corrections, says no one contracted TB while in custody in Anchorage. In a statement, Holly called the ACLU's claims, quote, categorically false and dangerously misleading, and said all ICE detainees were screened for TB by corrections medical staff. She added that latent TB is not contagious and that active TB is typically transmitted over a longer period of time than the days the detainees were held in Anchorage. Megan Barker, a spokeswoman for the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska, says when the detainees got to Tacoma, they were told by ICE that they'd been exposed to TB back in Anchorage. The organization has been assisting ICE detainees held in Alaska, and Barker says detainees told them there wasn't a consistent medical check when they arrived in Anchorage on June 8th. She says two men had tested positive for a latent form of TB.
Some folks who were detained told us that they just had a casual conversation with a nurse when they were, brought in and transferred to ACC, but then some, like the two that reported that they were tested for tuberculosis, they obviously had a different level of testing than what others got.
Barker says the ACLU was concerned that ICE detainees, as well as correctional officers and staff at the Anchorage jail, might not have been properly screened for TB. They also questioned whether TB cases were reported to the State Department of Health. After his client's release from the hospital, Quirk said he remained concerned that ICE officials are not allowing him and other attorneys to communicate with their clients, which he says violates the U.S. Constitution. A spokesman for ICE did not immediately respond to questions over whether officials at the Tacoma facility told the transferred detainees that they were exposed to TB in Anchorage, or whether ICE was barring detainees from communicating with their lawyers. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And multiple research vessels are out in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska this summer conducting surveys that inform stock assessments for fisheries managers. One of those surveys only happens every 2 years and comes during a challenging time for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
The biennial Gulf of Alaska Bottom Trawl Survey started in mid-May and is scheduled to end in about a month. This survey captures the overall health of various species in the marine ecosystem, from the Aleutian Chain to southeast and areas in between, like around Kodiak Island. Last time this survey took place in 2023, NOAA scientists were keen to get updated numbers of Pacific cod. The species has been trying to recover since the marine heat wave, also known as the Blob, in 2019. While the Gulf of Alaska Bottom Trawl Survey is going on, NOAA typically conducts specific cod satellite tagging around the Aleutian Islands and in the northern Bering Sea around St. Lawrence Island. According to the survey's description on NOAA's website, scientists use pots or trawl nets to capture Pacific cod in the Aleutians and work with longline fishermen and Alaska Native community members to tag the fish in the northern Bering Sea. Next week, a longline survey of sablefish and several groundfish species like rockfish is set to begin. This annual assessment did not happen in 2024, and this year's has a delayed start. One of the longline survey coordinators said via email the survey will begin in Dutch Harbor on July 15th and end in Dutch Harbor at the beginning of September. The survey will also include some stops in Yakutat along the way. NOAA Fisheries has been dealing with substantial staffing cuts leading up to the surveys. The Alaska Fisheries Science Center lost roughly 50 employees since February, according to reporting from KUCB Radio. Bob Foy, the director of the center, told the North Pacific Fishery Management Council last month that NOAA's annual bottom trawl survey in the eastern Bering Sea will produce less data and information than usual this year as a result of the staffing cuts. That survey is scheduled to wrap up at the end of this month and is already producing preliminary data on ocean temperatures from around Bristol Bay to St. Matthew Island. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
A fire burned through the public safety building and city jail in the western Alaska coastal community of Shivok early Tuesday morning. City officials say the building is a total loss. City Administrator Nathaniel Atchuk says city officials believe the fire was caused by aging electrical wire.
They believe it was electrical due to the age of the building and past experiences with electrical at the building.
This is KTOO.